ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast. Many of us are waking up to God's not a formula to be worked. He's a God who loves us, who has a purpose in the world to redeem it back to himself, who will work good in our lives through the most horrible things that we face.
When we first started this whole podcast thing, so you and I were trying to come up with a name. I just remember somehow the whole God Journey thing settled.
And we've had people tell us that was a stupid name.
Those just few words say an awful lot of true things. This isn't my journey. This isn't just my deal, my little story. It's not about me. I am just a supporting actor in a greater drama that isn't about me.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
Oh, no, you're not.
That's true.
Oh, gosh. Man, if you're Brad Cummings, we're all in trouble.
We are?
We would be if Brad sounded like that and looks like this. And, we got a mess.
Oh, I don't think so.
So this isn't Brad Cummings. This is, in fact...
Sarah Jacobson.
It's my wife, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
You don't come up here enough for a podcast. What's wrong with you?
I haven't been invited.
You are always invited. You and Kelly are always welcome here, unless you guys take over the mics and then...
Well, I seem to think that you and Brad have a lot to say, I don't think I would be able to get anything in.
Oh, is that right? You think we're talkers, do you?
Slightly.
Sometimes we are.
Sometimes?
Sometimes. It's sometimes hard with just Brad.
Most of the time.
It's sometimes hard for me to get a word in edgewise. And
he probably feels the same thing.
I'm sure he does. Anyway, I know we promised you Paul Young. We said in the last podcast, Paul Young's going to be in town. We're going to record a podcast with him. We actually recorded two, and they were two of the most incredibly, wonderfully discussing podcasts about the Shack. Unfortunately, the audio was bad, and everything we've tried to do to fix it has not worked. It was recorded badly. A lot of static, unsalvageable, so we had to scrap those podcasts, and then we thought, boy, what can we do to get a podcast up by the end of the year? Since Brad's already headed out of town with his family for a little bit of a New Year's celebration. And so what better thing to do but have Sarah come in and join us. So, Sarah, I'm glad you're here.
Well, thank you.
And before we get to the topic at hand, which I think is particularly appropriate that Sarah would be here, we can talk about this together. I want to read you a letter we got from Ellen in Missouri. And to Brad and Wayne, said, thank you for using your time and resources to put out the God Journey podcast each week. My husband and I have been living outside of organized religion for several years, and I have often found the journey somewhat lonely. Your podcasts have helped to bring about a sense of community and a oneness to the family of God. I'm in contact with a woman in Germany who's a listener, and I'm amazed at the similar things we are encountering despite the very different cultures. God is so faithful, and I'm thankful that he is using you all to equip the saints. I have never felt so liberated to just love people without comparison or judgment or expectation. It is truly wonderful. Isn't that nice?
That's a great letter.
Yeah, great, great statement. And then she said, I asked my 5-year-old to draw a picture of a gratefully disillusioned person, and I liked it so much I made some T-shirts for you of his drawing. You're a blessing, and I hope they will bless you. And Ellen, they do. They're great looking. It's got this little disillusioned kid, some bright colors, gratefully disillusioned on it. And we keep picking up T-shirts from time to time, people sending us Don't Shit on Yourselves and Gratefully Disillusioned. And one of these days, we're actually going to get our own done so that they'll be available to folks. But thank you, Ellen. We appreciate the fact that for a lot of people, this discussion Brad and I are having, helping other people have those conversations with other folks, too. So that's a whole lot of fun. Well, one of the things that Brad and I have had on our list for the last 2 years, actually, to talk about and have just never gotten around to it, try though we have to get there, we're going to talk about being unequally yoked. And I got this email first probably 2 years ago. And then we've had some more recent comments on our forum about it, and we'll read some of those in a minute, too. This is from Pam. She said, my husband loves this role as a leader in the Sunday morning congregation they go to. He's part of the leadership team there. She says, I feel unequally yoked for the first time. Well, sort of. We were always very like-minded. But are there any other listeners experiencing the dilemma of having your spouse see fellowship so differently?
That's a hard one to be able to continuously live with. And does it say how long they've been like that?
No, and 2 years out, this could be very different today. We don't know if Pam and her husband are still in the same place at all. But this is the question. I get a lot when I travel around. This is kind of from the other side of it now. This is a guy writing, and I also got this letter a couple years ago, though I don't have a name still with it. It got cut off. He said that, "I must confess that these are trying times for me. My wife desires to continue to be part of an institutionally structured church, whereas my longing is to come out and simply meet organically and relationally. I find myself really struggling to look beyond the negatives, hierarchy, one man in charge of the meeting mentality, etc., when present in the services. Not only do we come face to face with the spirit of control, but also that of segregation, children with children, youth with youth, adults with adults, etc. When I share my concerns with leadership, I'm basically reminded that God instructed them to do it this way," which is a whole other podcast. Let's not go there, because there's nothing in Scripture about doing it that way. But there are just a lot of people convinced that's the way it's got to be done. "Furthermore, most important, my main concern is how to handle the present hardship of my wife wanting to be in such a place. Do I need to give her the freedom to go where and when she so desires? To her, the problems in the church seem so insignificant. She appears to be simply loving people and not worrying about all the control issues. But for me, all these things really eat at me. I wonder what the Lord is teaching me. Where do I go from here?" Underlying both of those, too, I guess, is people who were part of an institution together, enjoyed it together, part of their family life, as it was for you and I for many, many years.
And it changed for one of them more than the other.
Yeah. Now, that creates an interesting dynamic in a family, particularly if one, it's not just a matter of, I would like to do something different, but I don't feel like I can go there anymore.
But I don't know if one's right and one's wrong. They're both at a different place, both situations. The spouse may be at a different place.
And that's on the danger. I like what you said about right and wrong, because sometimes, and I think religion teaches us to do this, we look at every decision as a right or wrong.
Yeah.
Either go, and that's the right thing to do, or you don't go, and that's the right thing to do. And somehow if it's right and wrong, then you've got to get your partner to change their mind. And that doesn't work particularly well.
But I don't know if there's any rights or wrongs, because a lot of times there is a right answer and a wrong answer. You know, where is God in the midst of all that to where he changes and works with things? I don't think there is any right or wrong. You do what you believe the Lord is calling you to do.
Well, in this
follow
area,
them.
You're not saying there aren't rights and wrongs in larger constructs, but
in following the Lord,
how we walk out this, and even where there are rights and wrongs, I do think there's a way God leads us into truth. And it's really wonderful when he's got a couple and walks them into truth together.
Yep.
And freedom together. But it doesn't always happen for every couple. In fact, a lot of couples, I don't know that many couples stay on the same page every day for their whole lives. So we do find times in marriage. I mean, just like I think about how different you and I are from when we met. Sarah and I met over 35 years ago now. We were both college freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
I was training to be a pastor, and Sarah's thing was she never wanted to be a pastor's wife.
True.
Yeah, and you were more right than me, but that's another story. But when we got married, as we graduated from college, we had all these dreams and desires and things we thought our life would be.
We have expectations. You picture in your mind what your future is going to be like, and boy, life doesn't go quite that well for many people.
Well, I think how much we've changed in the last 30, almost now 33 years of marriage. We've changed. You're not at all the woman I met and married.
Right.
And I'm pretty different from the guy I think you met and married.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're looking for, in particular in terms of spiritual things, what we're looking for now in our spiritual life is very, very different from what we did back then. I'd say we were much more religious, following the obligations, trying to work our way through that system. You more tentative about that than me, because you just didn't want to be a pastor's wife. And somehow we ended up there. I don't know. You chose the wrong
guy. For a while.
Yeah, for a while. And yet, and people have asked me that, you know, through this whole transition that you guys have gone through, and there have been many in our marriage. It's not just how we view church. There have been many things that we've gone through. Some we'll talk about maybe today as well. But they've asked, have you and Sarah always been on the same page? I've responded this way to people. I think we've not always been on the same page every day.
No.
But I think we've always been in the same chapter.
Yes.
God's been leading us similarly. At any point in the journey, you may be a couple steps ahead down the road. I may be a couple steps down there, and what we're saying, the other person can't quite see yet.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that we've continued to try to find a way to walk together and somehow merge our stories so that it can be something that we share along the way. But not everybody gets that break.
I was going to say, fortunately, we've had that blessing of being able to be relatively close in time frame as far as where we are on the same page or in the same chapter. But for some of these people, if it goes and continues, if those hopes of having a spouse on the same page or in thinking the same way continues on for a long period of time, that can become discouraging or just disappointing.
Yeah, I think it's obviously fun when a couple is on a similar chapter together or even on the mm-hmm. same page there. And I think right now in our life, would you say we're pretty much on the same page in terms of spiritual things?
Oh, I think so.
I get that question from time to time, particularly when you're not with me, when I'm traveling around. Say, is Sarah kind of on the same page you are? And I've said, yeah, right now I think we're pretty much on the same page.
Oh, I would think so now, not when you were in pastoral ministry and towards the end.
Oh, really?
Well, not in the same chapter, but not necessarily on the same page at that point in time.
Do you want to talk about that at all? Do people understand what you're saying?
Unless you were to.
I don't mind.
Well, I mean, the pain was so deep and so hurtful that there were, towards the end, times that I just couldn't go on a Sunday morning. And obviously that was your job.
I was paid to be there.
And
some people thought I was paid for you to be there, too.
Well, they didn't pay me. They thought they paid me, but they didn't pay me.
They paid me to get you there because when you weren't there, there were some angry people. Why'd you stop going?
It hurt too much. It was too painful, and I felt like a hypocrite.
There was a lot of broken relationships among our leadership team at the time, a group that had been together for a significant period of time, had mm-hmm. tried to walk in friendship together, and now there was a lot of dishonest things going on and some backstabbing, which I kept saying, it's just people's flesh. They'll get over it. Let's keep walking with these people. And it got too painful for you to do that.
Well, yeah. We would have our time of communion and then about every 3-4 months, and then
everybody repent, never to hurt each other again.
And I was encouraged to believe the best in somebody. And I tell you, when you just go away and the same thing goes over and over again, I just couldn't do it. I felt like a hypocrite. Plus, there was a lot of family issues that were going on at the time with my parents and stuff. And there were a handful of dear, dear, special close friends of ours who walked me and you and us through those times and would not have made it without their support and love. But obviously there was a lot of others in the body that caused tremendous pain and hurt and was not healthy, and I couldn't be there.
And so you took a couple weeks out, and I kept going. Fortunately, it was one of those times you said, I'm not going, and I didn't even try and make you go. I thought that was pretty cool because normally I would have probably tried to make you go.
Yes.
You did ask
if I was ever going to go back.
Yeah, and you weren't sure.
No, and I didn't know.
It was just
not if it was going to be that painful. It hurt too much.
It was kind of a week-to-week thing. And then we suddenly end up outside of that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that you had seen, I think this was a big deal for you, because some of the things that you had seen in the last year that I was trying to tell you, hey, it's not true, let's believe the best, let's whatever, turned out to be right. And that was a pretty significant thing for you.
Oh, yeah. My opinion never mattered at that point in time in my life.
To me?
No, to myself. Not to others, but to myself.
And that was the beginning of a whole other transition for Sarah. But I think what's really significant, and I think what we want to get to, is that there are times in our journey as couples where we have the same hunger and heart for God, but may not be seeing the same way we need to walk, particularly in terms of fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, and I don't even think that rises to what being unequally yoked is. We're getting
no.
some other things on the form. Unequally yoked would be more, I'm with somebody that doesn't even see God like I see God, or doesn't, embrace God. Being married to an unbeliever, for instance, which I think is what Paul's really getting at when he talks about being unequally yoked. I don't think it's specifically about marriage. It's only used once in Scripture in 2 Corinthians, and we've always applied it. Nervous parents have always applied it to their kids. Don't marry an unbeliever,
you know.
And yet we have seen in the course of our lives people who marry a good, quote-unquote, church-going
mm-hmm.
person
yep.
who turns out to be abusive, dangerous, horrible down the road, or after they get married, turns out to just not have any spiritual hunger at all. And so I don't think being unequally yoked, when you're making that choice, I think you'd want to say to people, when you're making a choice to partner with someone for life or partner with someone in business, make sure you have the same passions and whatever. But Scripture even talks more to people who are married to someone who doesn't share, even if they're married to an unbeliever. Both Paul and Peter address it in their letters, saying, hey, if you're married to someone and you're unequally yoked, in, or you don't use that terminology, but they're not a believer and you are, keep loving them, that your gentle and quiet spirit would be part of their life. And I think in, what I hate about some of those passages is we've heard them for years, and that whole religious thing of, hey, you married it, you made your bed, you sleep in it, no matter how disgusting.
Well, that's a lot of compassion.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? No matter how neglectful, abusive, you married it, you live with it for the rest of your life. That's just what you've chosen. And I don't think that's what Peter or Paul are getting to. I think what Peter and Paul are opening the door to, particularly for people, now this is just, now we're going to take the far extreme, a believer and an unbeliever. And what they're saying is, you can still love that person. You can still be engaged with them. You can, we know couples who one's believer, one's not, who shared a great friendship together. They were good friends. They were partners in survival life together. Would the believing spouse want the unbelieving spouse to believe and share that spiritual part in their relationship too? Absolutely. Who wouldn't? But it didn't mean the relationship was horrible, because they didn't. There was room beyond that, I think.
But what we're talking about with Pam's letter, wasn't it Pam?
Yep.
Her letter and the other one, it's more not a believer, where you're with an unbeliever. It's another person who loves the Lord, but their way in which they're loving the Lord and where they're relating to people around and getting fellowship is on a different page. I think some of that is giving freedom and space, because, I mean, for you and me in that whole situation, it was more painful for me the last year going through that. And then once we left, I was okay with it. But for you, that was the time where it was harder on Sundays.
Yeah, and even though that time was brief, the whole congregational issue
thing.
Didn't
feel brief.
No, it didn't feel brief, because for 2 years, we processed that very differently.
Definitely.
I mean, you came out of it, I'm free, thank God I'm free. And I came out of it pretty brutalized by some of the betrayal and some of my constructs of a religious system that I thought was better at reforming it than we've had in the past. Those were collapsing. So for me, that was a very difficult time. For you, it was difficult in a different way, because you were now into some portion of your life where God was wanting you to discover who you were in Him. And that led to a season of a lot more independence from our relationship. Is that fair to say?
Independence, but also with a lot of pain, but it was a different type of pain. It was pain of trying to find who I was. So that was a little bit of a different struggle.
But there were a couple of years there where you and I didn't sync as well as we had synced most of our married life.
No.
We used to do marriage seminars, and I used to joke about people that we never fight in our marriage, because only one of us is willing to fight. And
I wasn't a fighter.
I thought that was a joke. It turned out to be more true than I would ever have wanted it to be true. Not that I need you to be a fighter, but found out that there were many things that you had on your heart that you wouldn't share because you just didn't think they'd have value.
True.
But during that season, I mean, it was kind of a scary time. I think it kind of gets to some of maybe what we could talk about on this podcast that would be helpful to people, whether it's believer, unbeliever, whether it's two people that just see congregational life differently. And that is, maybe marriage isn't sharing the same journey. I think part of that religious construct of marriage is now that our marriage is successful to the degree that we can conform together, that we can look alike, talk alike, act alike.
Well, as marriage, though, you know, they say where the two become one. However, and that is true. But yet, I first am a daughter of the Heavenly Father, and whereas you're a son. And so that relationship is also unique to each one of us. And there's a freedom and a respect in giving us each space to be able to go in that journey and relating to Him and what He's doing internally. And sometimes that's a lot of different seasons that are going through that. And you're not always in the same season. I guess that's a good way of trying to picture it.
I think it's a good way to picture it, or the same stage of the journey. Maybe the two becoming one. There's one element to that that's physically true. I mean, God, just like God declares us righteous long before we actually live righteously, that's who we are. That's our status.
Mm-hmm.
But becoming one is the whole joy of a marriage. I think we are more one today than we've ever been, and our journeys are much more intersecting today than they have at other seasons of our lives. For 20 years, we pretended they did. It looked like we were, but it wasn't true. 2-3 years of this real transition where I even sat there one night and I asked you, are we going to get through this? And you looked at me and said, what do you mean? I said, am I going to be with you on the other side of it? Because I was a little bit worried about you, you know, one of those wives discovering themselves and suddenly finding out I wasn't included. And I love the way you just looked at me that night and you just said, well, of course. And it was like not even a thought for you that I was going to be left out of this. But it had become a real thought for me, because places where I tried to help you, you kind of pushed back saying, I just need space. Me and Jesus need to sort this out, and I don't need you in there trying to tweak it for whatever you have involved in it.
And I think that's where, out of love and hunger, you know, we want to share a journey, share a vision, a certain type of life together. You see other couples who they have maybe you're desiring to have that relationship and fellowship with other believers, and sometimes you don't, and a lot of times through that you know it's freedom and space, letting them, what do they need, what do you need from me, if you need space, if you need me to back off, and providing that, not try to take that too personal.
Yeah, and that takes a different view of marriage. Instead of marriages we must share the same journey, marriages you're on a journey. Whatever your spiritual journey, whatever God's doing in you on a given day, I'm on a spiritual journey. And I always say it's true even of an unbeliever. God's not given up on unbelievers. They are on a spiritual journey, whether or not they've bought into the reality of who God is yet. And maybe marriage isn't, okay, darling, you must share my journey, either side saying that. But it is, hey, I'm supporting you on your journey, and you get to support me on mine. And so it's not the need to conform people to act the same way, but the freedom for each of us to have our journey, to be inclusive of the other one. I think that's what makes a marriage more effective. When I want to include you in my journey, so I'm letting you know what it is, and you care about it, and you're open to it, I'm the same way with you, then maybe with that, the two become one. Maybe over the course of 30, 40, 50 years of marriage, we become increasingly the one life that we began 30, 40 years ago when we got married, that maybe that's the way that would help people not feel so pressed to get their partner on the same page that they're on. That maybe that's not even a goal of ours.
Well, I think if you get expectations in there and trying to control someone, what I needed at that point in time, because I didn't know who, I mean, everybody else thought they knew who Sarah was, but at that point in time, I didn't even know who I was. The whole church thing and parents and some other family things that were going on, not on my side of the family and not with us, but I was needing space.
And this process changed you almost totally. Would you say that?
That's a good term.
I joke
that's,
about there's
that's
a,
true.
There's a pre-94 Sarah and there's a post-96 Sarah, and I've had two wives in my life. It just happens to be the same woman, but you are a very different person.
Well, yeah, because I didn't think I was anything, and I mean, until a few years ago. I mean,
but those first 20 years for me, I mean, you were trying to compete with June Cleaver. I mean, you kids perfect, house perfect. You were not. I don't people think you were just, you know, sitting at home pouting in this little stew of a lousy self-esteem thing. Whatever that was going on inside. Well, on the outside, you were the pastor's wife that played piano, led Bible study things, did some incredible stuff. And just in the end, it was all you trying to fit in someone else's mold.
What I thought everybody needed, or what, I mean, everybody was more important than me. I was not important. And mainly I was not important because I didn't believe in myself. I didn't have any self-confidence. And how, I mean, it's a whole nother issue there, but I needed space. I needed space to be able to pursue and find, you know, what God had for me. And I think some of those people, if you're not on the same page, sometimes pressuring and encouragement to come alongside with your spouse can be sometimes not quite the right thing to do. But that's, you know, that's so unique to each person, what they're going through. Bottom line, I had to find out who God had created me, what I was created for, what my purpose was. And when all said and done, after we were had left pastoral ministry, both parents had passed away and kids were off to school, and I remember you were out of town and I was on the beach with the dogs and I was yelling at God, and now what? What do I do? I mean, and who am I? I had a huge void, and we have to, you know, find what God, and some of the, where we're on different pages is,
yep,
finding, you know, what God has for us. And we might not be involved in the same thing. Maybe you will find,
yeah,
something together, some kind of outreach or something that you guys have in common, and to be able to do something together. I mean, there's so many, many different ways to express and to do things.
Yeah, there's the freedom and there's the wonder of finding things to do together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also in the marriage the freedom not to do everything together.
Yeah, it's not. I don't know if it's always healthy to have. And some couples might. They love to do everything together.
Might be very healthy for some, exactly.
But that may not be the healthy thing. And I, you know.
And for you and me, we've ended up on very different pages vocationally,
yes,
spiritually, similar hungers, the way we live fellowship in the family, the life of grace and redemption that you and I have experienced, and the way we get to help other people grow in that trust. I mean, we're in conversation with you. I don't know any place where you and I are not really, not only on the same page, but maybe the same paragraph spiritually these days. But vocationally, we're not. Where I was hopeful at this age, doing the traveling that I'm doing and encouraging folks, I mean, I would love to have you with me on the road every night of our life, being able to go sleep in the same bed together. I mean, that would be great for me. The fact is, God's taken you vocationally on a bit of a different journey. Neither one of us saw it coming.
No, I didn't even see it coming.
That you would actually end up being a counselor at a public high school,
mm-hmm,
that's a gang-riddled high school. I mean, this is not your little urban enclave of upper-middle-class students. This has got some pretty serious need.
Very serious need, also very social-economic need.
Yeah, it's an incredibly needy school. Kids that don't always get a lot of support from their parents at home.
No.
And Sarah oftentimes becomes a surrogate parent. And yet, so you're not free to travel with me most of the year. You go when you can,
mm-hmm,
but for the most
couple
part,
times a year.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't get done until late on a Friday afternoon. You got to be in there early Monday morning, and there's rarely a trip where I leave Friday night and get back on Sunday night. That just,
yeah,
doesn't happen, particularly during this time of year. So I end up going alone, and you know what? We've seemingly, I think this is maybe analogous to people who feel like we're not on the same spiritual page together. Do you feel like our marriage suffers because we have so much time apart?
No, I don't think so. No, I think we nurture it. I mean, when you're gone, there's Skype, there's email, there's phone, there's ways that, you know, way beyond what they used to have.
And when I get home, you're really good about dropping a whole lot of other things. And we're, particularly when I'm home, just brief spans between trips, you're really home with me.
Yep.
Really connect. And in the long run, I would say our marriage has just grown stronger through that. It,
mm-hmm,
it really has. I don't take you for granted as much anymore. I know I did that a lot before. You're there all the time. It's easy to get short with people, and you want them to do things the way you want them done and fuss over things. And when you're not together as often, there's not many things that rise to the level of let's fuss over this.
True.
Because it's just not worth fussing over.
No.
Giving space, I think, is an important part of that, recognizing that you and I, maybe we don't have the same journey. Maybe you have a journey with Father and I have a journey with Father. And what we've been called to do is support each other on those journeys rather than try to make them the same journey.
Everybody is different. Your relationship with the Lord is different. What God's working you is different. And everyone's place in what God's having them do is important.
And in a marriage, it's wonderful to let people into that,
mm-hmm,
without necessarily having to make it the same.
Yeah.
But I know when I was pastor and women would show up with husbands that were home watching football games, or, you know, they would show up for service and the husband isn't there, particularly an unbelieving husband or just an unspiritually hungry husband, I think that was always kind of an embarrassment and a feeling like a second-class thing, that somehow we turn marriage into a competition sport and, you know, how much we're on the same page, and that we get merit badges for that. It's one of the hardest things on fellowship with people is feeling, oh, if my spouse isn't doing exactly the same thing I'm doing, that maybe people are going to look down on me.
And that's that.
And unfortunately, they often do.
They do. I mean, what's the same about husbands? If they don't have, you know, they don't have their wives and kids all coming and being, I mean, you got teenagers, you know, you got couples and then they're teenagers. And if they're not around and you got one family that seems to be the perfect family who has all their kids are coming and being involved, and then the other family who, you know,
some
kids
do, some kids don't. Yeah. And instead of having this joy of, hey, we're all on the, even as a family, I'm walking alongside my son or daughter or whatever, helping them see what God's revealing to them, not trying to make it look like we're this flawless, conformed family that does everything together.
But don't we always go more by what appearances is in comparison versus then how can I help you
I hope not always, but I think religion pushes us that way.
A large part.
Dave wrote this on the forum on this topic about unequally yoked. He said, my wife's a believer. She wasn't on this page with me when I left the institutional church. That was about 7 years ago, and she and I are still not on the same page in so many ways. I wanted and tried to get her to come along to see what I was seeing, but she thinks different than I do. Nonetheless, through it all, I just kept hearing Jesus saying to me, what is that to you? You, follow me. And your wife is in my capable hands. It has been lonely and frustrating for me, and it still gets that way from time to time. But you, and then he writes to the person who wrote the original note on the forum and said, you may not realize it now, but you may have a far greater impact on your husband than ever before. Be honest and open with him with what you sense God doing in your life. Why you sense that he was drawing you away from religion and into him. And this, the original woman who wrote, has just got a husband who's not a believer, wondering if being now outside the box would change things. And my thought on that is it would change things for the better. So many spouses feel threatened by the time that a person gives to a religious institution that doesn't include them. And when they don't have all that obligation anymore, and they can share with their spouse in a way that's not seeking to conform them, but just be, I find that the best conversations you can have with people, particularly people you disagree with, is when you're not trying to convince people you're right. When you're just sharing what it is that you're going through and you're listening to what they're going through, I think she probably has a much better opportunity to impact her husband than she ever did being part of a religious thing.
You're not trying to change somebody, or you know that somebody is trying to change you, encourage you to get them to get to your side of thinking. You don't want to always talk to them unless if somebody is just free, you can sit down and know you may not be on the same page, but respect each other and where you're at. There's a lot of fellowship that can go on there. And if spouses can be able to get to that point, whatever that looks like or however that happens, I think it's better for them.
I think it can be, like Dave says, it can be lonely at times. Yeah. Who wouldn't want their spouse to be able to share the same spiritual conversation? That'd be great. But if the spouse isn't there, ask God to give it to you with other folks, to people who can share that part of your journey, and yet still be aware that your spouse, husband or wife, is also on a spiritual journey, even if they don't know it. And how do I engage them in a way that is helpful to that?
Unless they find something that they can at least go together, like some kind of community service they went to.
Exactly.
Or it could be like, you know, like this type of time of year in the seasons. You know, there might be some kind of Christmas play or Christmas concert or, you know, a Thanksgiving or special events at which you could be able to participate. Because you love that person, you want to be involved in your life. It's just your role, and the part that you have might be different, but it's just respecting each other and encouraging them. What do you need? You know, how can I help you or how can I support you? And that looks different for each couple, each person in that couple.
Yeah, we're not obviously saying, I mean, we're talking about couples that love each other, respect each other, even if they don't have the same belief system. That's cool. I stayed in a home earlier this year with a couple, one who's involved with the traditional Sunday congregation, the husband who is not. And it was interesting staying in their home because they really are on a very similar spiritual journey. I mean, sitting in their home, sitting at their table and hearing them, you know, learning grace, learning to live and all that, wanting relational connections, finding those with a wonderful group of people where they live. But the wife, for very important reasons that she shared with me, she really feels like this Sunday morning connection is important for her. It's a community of people that she feels like is a real support to her life, and she wants to be there. He used to be a pastor. He would like to go with her, I think, at times, but every time he does, it's not like I can go sit through a service with my wife. Because I think the traveling I do, if you were part of a fellowship here, a Sunday morning congregation, and I was home on a Sunday morning, I'm pretty sure I'd go with you. I'm pretty sure I'd sit there and make whatever it is what it is. And if I'm bored with it or feel like the guilt's, I'd probably pray for other people in it. You and I'd talk about it on the way home. But I think I would go just because I'd want, if this is important to you, I'd want to be there for you. But this guy, his reality is this, just where he's at on his journey, to go sit through that service on a Sunday morning costs him 2 days of digging out from the despair, from all the little things it still pulls, all the little chains it pulls in his life. So for him to go, he's just not at this point in his journey free to go. As much as she would like to have him there, she's okay with it.
Yeah.
He, on the other hand, says to her, I don't mind you going. But she looked at me and said, should I stop going? Because I think that's what he really wants. And I said, look, he's told you that's not what he really wants. For you to go, and for, so you have a few hours apart on Sunday morning while he's home doing stuff he wants to do, she's in this fellowship thing. If people love and respect each other, I don't think that's a problem at all.
No, and not. And then if they're saying they're not having a problem with it, then I would believe him at face value what he's saying. I mean, it's just what someone wants to do, it's letting you have the freedom to do that. But then it comes into play is, if any expectations come back into that, to where a spouse is wanting you to do something, and that's where, you know, you just give freedom and space and be able to process through.
It's getting helping people to see that marriage is not about conformity.
No.
It's about love and support.
Mm-hmm.
Loving, caring, respecting, not trying to get you on my same page. And obviously we're not talking about marriages that may be abusive in some way. This was also written on the forum. It says, for instance, he said, this is a very hard thing to talk about around religious people because everybody's got their mind made up. But do you stay with an unbeliever so that they can be won by your chaste conversation? Is there any justification to leave a believer ever? What about this contrast? An unbeliever who is happy to live with a believer versus a believer who is dangerous to his own believing family. Where does it fall? They're both unequally yoked in situations like that, if you ask me. First of all, I don't think it's a matter of just want. I think Scripture pulls it out of the want. I'm not happy here. I'm going to go somewhere else. What Scripture makes clear is you are better off working, however you got married and whatever you've developed in your marriage, whatever roads you've traveled, it is easier for God to work out what you have than the pie in the sky, grass is greener on the other side of the hill, I'll go try this with someone else. On the other hand, I think Scripture also makes clear that that marriage was not meant to be a prison.
No.
That if you're being abused, neglected, harmed in some way, or people you love or some of the other family members are being harmed, there is freedom to walk away from a destructive relationship.
Yes.
And that's probably a podcast for another day, because there's a whole lot that we could process there.
As we're talking about, what we're talking about is not in situations like that.
We're not talking to that depth of pain or brutality. We're just talking about normal couples, the give and take of the reality of life, whether it's spiritual, vocational, material, however. We've got to share these journeys together. Somehow be partners in each other's boat, so I'm making the road not more difficult for you. I'm trying to make it easier for you, and hopefully, and I know that's what you're doing for me as well. You're wanting it to be easier. But Bev Ann, she wrote this on the phone. I thought this was kind of cute. She said, my husband and I are both believers, but I don't think we've ever been on the same page, even though it might have looked like it at times. This has resulted in some pretty, actually not so pretty, spectacular fireworks. Now we're letting each other experience their own journey, which is wonderful. To which Kevin responded, at my house, we refer to the fireworks show as intense fellowship. My wife and I try to be spiritual as we verbally knock the snot out of each other.
Is that more theological discussions? Because sometimes theological discussions can be pretty heated.
They can, again, if you're trying to convince.
Yeah.
If you love and respect each other enough to say, gosh, I don't agree with what you're saying, but that's interesting, and here's how I see it, and then that's how a couple goes on together. When one looks at the other and says, you're an idiot, I think it's pretty well over for that.
Say, that's not going to work.
That's not going to be helpful at all. I think Nicole summed this up well. She wasn't talking about marriage. She was talking about family life over Christmas. But I think the point is still made. And I love what she wrote, so I'm just going to read part of it here. She said, one morning earlier this week, I was praying and telling Father I was done with trying to control my relations with the family and wanted to relinquish all sense of control that I was holding on to religiously. I prayed for the Holy Spirit to lead me and guide me and wanted his ultimate involvement in my daily life. I decided that I was done with trying to make things happen. Man, I'd like to underscore that and put yellow highlighter all over it. Here's the question I get so often when I'm traveling. How do I make so-and-so, whether it's, you know, pastor, family member, spouse, child, how do I get so-and-so to
like
think,
you're going to be able to make somebody do something?
Boy, and everything that starts that way ends with manipulation. There's a difference between I want to be open and honest with you and I want to change the way you think so that you think like I do.
Well, you always know if someone really is trying to control and change you and listening and care about you then versus if they're really listening to hear you.
So getting to this place of I'm done trying to make things happen, that's just a great thing. And then she says this. And I wanted to give Father full reign. Well, that evening, my husband and I went to a Christmas party at some friend's house, and there were quite a few people who didn't know. We didn't know there. I started talking to some ladies, and one of the ladies I didn't know just opened up and started sharing some real deep personal stuff about her walk with the Lord. And as the conversation progressed, Father led me to share some of my journey that related to what she was sharing. And through it all, our conversation became very authentic and flowed so naturally. I think when we give up trying to make things happen, wonderful things do happen because we can follow what God's doing. Just what I've always imagined what it would be like. I came to find out we had a lot in common. She is on the same page where I am with the Lord versus religion, and it was beautiful. I was amazed at how easy it was, and it makes a lot of sense when you don't have the angst to want to control, and then things flow so naturally. We ended up exchanging phone numbers, and we're going to keep in touch. I'm beginning to allow the Spirit to lead me and just let things flow wherever Father wills. It's amazing how freeing it is just to be. It really works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and on any given day, probably a lot of marriages aren't on the same page. Maybe not even in the same chapter. Maybe not even in the same
book.
But if you love and respect each other, and if you look to support each other's journey and let God do the work, I think some wonderful things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as for us, I have loved being married to you. There have been days when I wasn't happy about it. But they've just grown less and less and less. I tell you, every day of my life, I'm grateful that God brought you into my life. I'm grateful for the life that we share together. And I love you. I love you very much.
I love you too.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Enjoy it. You're welcome back anytime. Don't wait for an invite.
I think I'll wait for an invite.
Oh, boy.
You
okay.
And Brad always say you have your whole list up here on the board as far as topics that you're going to discuss.
And now we get a good evening together, and you're not going to try and conform me into anything, right?
Never.
Okay.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,